Please rise.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Schmidt, Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin. The Honorable John Schmidt presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is March 27th, and we have two cases on for argument today, and then we have two cases for our non-oral calendar. And I'll ask the marshal to go ahead and call the first case.
Now calling A241639, Almir Puse versus City of Burnsville, Minnesota.
All right, and counsel, I know you're both familiar with our rules, but counsel for appellant, you'll have 15 minutes and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes. And the lectern does adjust if you want to raise the height right underneath, sort of in the center, there's two buttons and it go up and down, adjust it as you see fit. And then you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. This case is up here on one issue and one issue alone, although the briefing wandered all over the place. The one issue is mootness. And the lower court ruled only on that issue. Many of the other issues that have been presented were neither presented to the lower court or in any event not ruled on by it. So let's look straightly at the mootness issue. There's nine different reasons why claiming there was mootness was incorrect. First of all, I'd like to remind the court that mootness is not a jurisdictional issue. As our Supreme Court said, mootness is not mechanical issue that is automatically invoked whenever the underlying dispute between the parties is settled or otherwise resolved. It is instead a flexible doctrine. But note those last few words. Even when it's settled or otherwise resolved, mootness is not automatic. Even then, here, that did not even happen. We also have several other issues. This issue was never raised below. The contention was by the opposing side that because plaintiff did not file his plat, that it automatically was revoked. That would have happened 5 years ago. The first time they raised it was 1 year ago, less than a year ago. It was the first time they ever raised it. They did not raise it to the trial court, despite the fact that it happened a year before the trial. They did not raise it to this court, despite the fact that we were in front of this court about 6 months after that. The first time they ever raised it was to the Supreme Court. And then, two more reasons why it's not available to them any longer. They withdrew it. They put it in the brief, never having raised it in this court, never having raised it in the trial court, and then they withdrew it. But despite the fact they withdrew it, the Supreme Court went ahead and ruled against them on it. So you have the fact they didn't raise it, and they did raise it, they withdrew it, and then they lost on it. And of course, the law is you can't re-raise in the trial court something that's been ruled on above or on a remand something that was not raised above.
But the Supreme Court didn't address mootness. It just said we have not been presented with adequate evidence that this case is moot.
That's right. And when you raise an issue in a court that says you haven't presented the evidence, that doesn't give you another chance to go try it. The same evidence was presented to the second trial court on remand. You don't get a chance to re-litigate it. That you're done.
But on remand, the evidence was put before the trial court that said the money was returned. And that evidence, I don't think, was before the Supreme Court.
That's true. But let's go to that in two ways. First of all, there was absolutely no evidence presented that withdrawal was even automatic. Excuse me, that removal of the plat was even automatic. As you recall, the explanation they gave to the trial court on the remand was, we decided that he didn't intend to file it. This is 5 years later. If that's the case, that means for those whole 5 years, it was in their discretion as to whether they were going to take his plat away or not. So you have that. But the other issue that I mentioned that we skipped past is they withdrew it. When you withdraw it, then, you know, that's it. You can't play games like that. You can't come up to this court and say, we don't want you to rule on that issue. We'll take it back to the district court. And don't forget, the district court did not remand that issue. The district court said, I don't mean the district court, the Supreme Court said there was not enough evidence. Let's go to some of the other issues here. The fact that it was not raised or ruled on below is itself terminal to the argument. You can't invent an issue that happened before the trial at the Court of Appeals or at the Supreme Court. You're not allowed to do that. And that's what they tried to do here. There was nothing new that happened between the trial and the Supreme Court at all. It was the exact same information before the available, but not presented to the trial court that was raised later. Let's go to a couple of the other issues. Even if you have a situation where it's settled or otherwise resolved, here, first of all, it was not resolved. The exact same issue the plaintiff was raising below, he continues to raise today. And that issue is, can the city require an unconstitutional taking without just compensation as a precondition to a plat? And that issue has never been ruled on, and that still exists. So we don't, typically what you have in a mootness case is the parties have settled it or something else happened that completely settles it. Here, one of the issues is it likely to happen again? It's guaranteed to happen again. First of all, it's happening statewide. People are looking at, and opposing counsel has put out on his emails that the constitutional issues were settled. They weren't, and specifically the Supreme Court said they weren't. What you have then is all over the state, locales are using the same ordinance. And this ordinance, the Supreme Court did not base any part of its decision on this ordinance. In fact, it was clear it didn't use this ordinance because the basis it used to make its decision were things that were not in the ordinance. And so you have a situation where this is going on everywhere now. It's statewide.
Mr. Cooper, is there any reason to think that those other instances statewide, that those could not go to the court system and be ruled upon in due course?
Well, one of the key issues I point out on that is two things. First of all, Your Honor, this is 6 years I've been on this case. The ability to get this case decided anywhere quickly is non-existent. It takes forever. When the court says, it's not just a time, it's not just an ability, it's the practicality. Usually what you're talking about are people who don't want to have that fight. You know, they've had some property taken unconstitutionally. They want to get on with their thing, and it's unlikely to get up here again. In this particular case, we know that this particular plaintiff will have it imposed upon him again. We checked that. And they said, and he is going to try to replat. And they indicated, no, you're going to have to go through this same process again. There's not a requirement that it must be the time. Time is only one criteria to look for when you look to see if it's going to have a lasting effect. And what we have here to evade, the word isn't how much time, it says evade review. And so far, despite the fact this is being done all over the state, review is being evaded. Here, everything has been going on for years. Everything is ready for a decision. The briefing below, everything is there. There's no need to delay it as hundreds of people, I don't know how many people, as many people are having to have this unconstitutional taking.
But your client could file a new, you could start over, and then within the 1 year, after it's approved, within the 1 year, file the plat, and then you're up and running again. So that's why the evade review part is, I'm struggling with that piece.
Well, the key part you said was, again, why? We're here now. There was not, that's only one, there's like five or nine different ways in which this was faulty. That's only one. First of all, you do not have, what you normally have to have is the initial issue has been resolved. It hasn't been resolved. The initial issue is still before this court and before the trial court, more exactly. It's still there. And it should go back and be resolved. It's never been resolved. For my client, after 6 years of battle, to have to start the whole process over again when it's all here, there's nothing missing for the trial court. There's nothing new they will gain if he files again for the same plat. And there's also no, because they didn't, go to the timeliness thing, because they didn't file below, there was no discovery. It's very doubtful that, in fact, they ever do this. And the reason I say it's doubtful is the reason they gave for doing it 5 years later is because at that point in time, out of thin air, they claim they decided that he was not going to file it. They don't claim they ever told them to file it. They don't claim that they've ever revoked anybody else for not filing without warning. They don't claim they ever gave them any kind of notice. There's none of that claimed in this case.
Well, the ordinance says you have to file within 1 year, right?
The ordinance says that, but nothing says they actually enforce it. And in this case, they didn't enforce it, and that's a key point.
But did your client file within 1 year?
Not to my knowledge, but I'm not aware of. I know I certainly had no notice he had to, and I don't believe he did. Now, I know ignorance of the law is not a defense, but you still have, what do they normally do? Did they follow their normal procedures? Or is this because this guy was being a pain in the neck? They saw a way out of getting a constitutional decision, particularly because they specifically withdrew it from the Supreme Court. Why would you do that?
I don't know that they did withdraw it. Where did they? I watched the argument the other yesterday, and in rebuttal, your opposing counsel said that the Supreme Court shouldn't remand the case at all. They should decide the issue but not remand it because it's void.
But the issue that they didn't want the issue of the that we're talking about resolved. They withdrew that. Specifically says in the footnote that I cite in my brief that the respondent withdrew two issues. One, the false claim that we hadn't filed properly. They withdrew that. And second, they withdrew this issue.
Well, I agree that service was withdrawn. That was very clear, that the service issue, which is jurisdictional, was withdrawn. And the footnote definitely says that. But the mootness issue about whether this is void, the Supreme Court didn't say it was withdrawn. It said we don't have an adequate evidentiary record.
That's not what it said at the beginning of that paragraph. If you look at the beginning of the paragraph, it said they withdrew two issues, as we quote in the brief. They withdrew two issues, the footnote says. And then at the end it says, even though they withdrew it, there's no evidence to support it anyway. So that is, it was withdrawn. I've never heard of anything allowed to be withdrawn in an appellate court and then relitigated below without a specific request. And the case law is that if something's remanded for one reason, that doesn't resurrect anything else.
The factual record did change, right, in between the Supreme Court argument and the district court proceedings that followed. There was a change in the fact, right, in the fact that the money, in fact, was returned?
That was a single change, but that doesn't resurrect something that you could have done 5 years ago. You can't wait until later to do it. You had to raise it at the trial court. You don't suddenly get an opportunity now that you've lost, that you've gone all the way through these procedures to bring up an issue that you waived many years ago. They not only waived it in the Supreme Court, they waived it at the trial court, they waived it at this court. They never raised it. They could, don't forget, these are all unilateral actions. They could have, at any time they wanted to, have given back the money. They didn't.
Am I correct? You're not relying on the voluntary cessation doctrine?
I'm not sure if I understand the way you. Yeah. I apologize. I'm not sure.
I thought I remember seeing it somewhere in the briefing. That it's a doctrine, I think, more common in the federal courts, that if one party avoids voluntary cessation, you know, ceases a certain conduct or status or enforcement, so as to bring, to moot an issue that otherwise might have gone forward, to avoid a judicial resolution.
Yes, we have presented that issue, and that issue makes very clear.
Well, so is that in your briefing? Because I don't know if it's been.
It's in our brief,
in
Minnesota, yes, Your Honor.
But.
And I will agree with you, Your Honor, that the cases that we cite on that one are federal cases. But the doctrine, the concept, we have argued, and it is in our briefs. But it's only one of nine arguments. And one of the things I want to really stress is that we've got so many flaws here. It's not just the ones that I talked about so far. You've got also 462.358 subdivision 2CC, which seems to say that during the pendency of the legal fight, they can't withdraw it. And they did. It was the legal fight was still going on. And so you also have that issue. You have here, the curious thing is I don't know how they can possibly get around the issue that they didn't raise it at a proper time. The fact that they withdrew it in the Supreme Court is just another failure to want to proceed with the issue. And they did it for tactical reasons. They tactically wanted a decision on only some issues. They knew the Supreme Court wasn't going to rule on the constitutional issues because this court had ruled on non-constitutional issues. So they wanted a decision that they then could and did circulate throughout the state to all the cities that the cities are now following. I'm not going to wander into the constitutional argument, but I would say on its face, there's no way this ordinance can survive, nor did the Supreme Court say it could. The Supreme Court did not say a word about the propriety of this ordinance. But it's the law in Minnesota now. Everybody's following it. And so you have a situation, not only my client is being affected by it, but you would be, everybody would be. Anybody who wanted to change where their garage is sitting would be affected by it.
Do I understand from your prior comments that, I mean, do you agree that you and your client have it within your power to reapply and to again be assessed the fee and then again to make another challenge based on that?
Yes, we do have that ability, but as I was indicating before, that it'd be a gross waste of judicial economy and a gross waste of my client's resources. The issues are all prime and ready to be decided. They never raise it. So you still go back to the fact, we don't even get to these other issues. We start with the first issue, and the appeal is over right there. They didn't raise it in a timely manner. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
And this court has repeatedly
ruled that.
Why
is it more expensive to, of course, it depends on who's incurring the expense, perhaps, or the benefit. But why is it more expensive to file whatever was filed before, to refile it again with the city and then be assessed the fee and then the fee, and then you've got the harm, the injury, and then go forward? Our appellate process takes 90 days at least. And
there's about $10,000 or $11,000 you have to pay for the petition itself, which is legitimate, not under contention. You have to get their people to look at it. They have to approve it. You have to get your architects in and pay them to do it. That would all have to be done all over.
These other than the special 5% fee, you're saying?
Yes, other than that. It's very expensive. Then on top of that, we then have to go in front of city council again. We then have to go to the district court again. All of this takes time and money. So you have massive amounts of money that are being wasted.
Okay, I understand.
Okay. I see my red light's on.
All right, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Paul Reavers, and I represent respondent, City of Burnsville. We ask this court to affirm the district court's decision holding this matter is moot, because the plat is void and the appellant's escrowed park dedication fees and the amount of $11,700 have been returned to him. Those were the claims that were raised in the complaint. And give us the park dedication fees that were escrowed pursuant to state statute. And they also challenged the professional fees. That's not an issue anymore. The district court resolved that in the city's favor. And the the city code is clear. They had 1 year to file that plat. They did not do so. They did not file a request for any extension. They are charged with the knowledge of the law. And my colleague noted that ignorance of the law, to the extent they didn't know, is not a defense. And there's no requirement in the ordinance that we tell them the steps they must do. And candidly, in preparing for the Supreme Court argument, this is when we started from scratch to look at this whole case and frankly identified the issue in that preparation. That's why it appeared in the briefing before the Supreme Court. And obviously, if you listen to the argument, you know that we asked the court to get to the decision, but we also raised this issue at that point. And I think the Dean case, I think, is really the roadmap.
Can I stop you just for a minute? So if the ordinance is so clear, then why did you not return the money after 1 year and 1 day?
We did return it after the, following the Supreme Court decision, we did return it, Your Honor.
But that was much later than a year, right?
The issue, they didn't file it within a year. We identified it at the time of the Supreme Court, obviously more than a year after that, and then we subsequently did return it, Your Honor.
I know, but my question is, why didn't you return it? Right, you said the ordinance is clear.
Yep.
If you got to file within a year, if you don't, done. But
we didn't see it.
That's not the way city staff handled it, it seems.
We didn't identify it, Your Honor. candidly, until we were started. And again, I'll just explain that I, you know, started from scratch with this case and looked at everything from the beginning. That's when we identified it. That's when we raised it. We even raised the service issue because it didn't appear that it was served properly. But then we, right before the argument, we identified to the sheriff that it was served on the timely and then withdrew that argument. So that's another example. We're just trying to look at every issue as we're preparing to argue this in front of the Minnesota Supreme Court.
What about the your counsel's argument that you withdrew the mootness issue at the Supreme Court, and you should be held to that?
And I think the footnote's clear that we did not do that.
Well, I mean, counsel is correct that earlier in that footnote, the city withdrew both arguments at oral argument, which is the service and moot.
But reading the whole thing together, and I think you indicated that you listened to the argument, that's clearly not what I said to the Supreme Court. I did not withdraw that argument, and I could not. I mean, it's clear that the plat is void, and we did provide the evidence to the district court. It's in the record, the affidavit of the planner, laying out that, returning the money and pointing out that the plat was deemed void for violation of the city code. So the evidence was presented to the court. And to that point, I think the Dean case talks about that. So the Dean versus City of Winona case that we've cited in our brief, where the Minnesota Supreme Court talks in terms of that mootness is a jurisdictional question for the court. And it has to, and I'll just quote, mootness has been described as a doctrine of standing set in a time frame. The requisite personal interest that must exist at the commencement of the litigation, standing, must continue throughout its existence, mootness. So once this is void, and we pointed that out to the court, they've lost the personal interest to challenge the ordinance. They've received the relief they requested. What they're seeking now is they want to have the ordinance deemed unconstitutional. They have not filed the new application yet. They say they will. We don't know what that application, will it be the same? It may be. Will the ordinance be the same when it's there? It may be. But they have a right to judicial review under 462, which they utilized in this case. And where the Dean walks through the exceptions to the mootness doctrine, their argument is, well, it's gonna happen again, but it's has to evade judicial review. In other words, they have the ability to refile and have the issue vetted again by the district court. And the district court did a nice job utilizing the exceptions outlined in Dean and noting that this one does not fit any of those exceptions. And the Supreme Court there, traditionally those cases that evade review involve disputes of inherently limited duration, such as prior restraints on speech and short-term mental health confinement orders. So we certainly don't have that. And there's nothing in the record. I think I want to be clear here, too. My colleague has talked about a number of things that are not in the record. This notion that municipalities are willy-nilly utilizing the Supreme Court's decision in violation of the Constitution. Number one, it's not true, but number two, there's nothing in the record to support that. Now, do municipalities follow the dictates of the Minnesota Supreme Court? Absolutely. They're going to follow the direction that the court gives them, follow the direction that this court gives them. So there's nothing in the record to suggest that the Minnesota Supreme Court decision's been being used improperly by the city of Burnsville or by any other municipality. So, frankly, Your Honor, that's as simple as I can make this case, is that it is moot. None of the exceptions, and again, the district court did a very thorough order, and we certainly incorporate all the points that the district court made, outlining why none of the exceptions apply, and they have the ability, you heard my colleague indicate, they have the ability to file a new application and seek review if they're unhappy with it.
Are you aware of any cases where mootness has been waived or forfeited?
I'm not, Your Honor, and I think it continues through the case. That's why I cite the Dean case. You may have standing, it may not be moot, like here when they first sought review, but they have to continue it all the way through. And it's their burden to ensure compliance with the ordinance. It's not the city's job to tell them how to do it. And it's kind of mind-boggling that nothing happened in 6 years, that the project never moved forward. And so...
But on the flip side, I mean, to Appellant's counsel's argument, it has to be frustrating that the city didn't do anything after the one-year deadline passed and the litigation then continued for another 4 years.
Well, and again, they're aware of it. I mean, they're charged with the knowledge of the law. I mean, they should have filed that plat within a year, and they failed to do it. So they really have but only themselves to blame.
City could have voided it after a year and a day, right?
If the city certainly could have, if it had identified the issue at that time, could have voided the plat at that time. But again, we candidly didn't identify that issue until we were before the Minnesota Supreme Court. And candidly, I wish we would have found it sooner. So, but the escrow, too, here, the escrow is a state statute. So the ability to seek judicial review is 462.358 subdivision 2CC. So that's basically saying we're giving people, we don't want to hold up projects. If people want to challenge the park dedication fee, they have the ability to escrow it pursuant to state statute and then move forward with their project and seek judicial review, which they availed themselves here. So, and only if the city prevails or they lose the appeal does the money transfer to the city. And we have the affidavit from the city planner, the declaration in the record. This was held in escrow. It was not utilized by the city. It was returned to them. Therefore, the city fully complied with state statute and its ordinance. And again, that's what they requested in this litigation. They requested return our fees, and they've gotten that relief. For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask, and I acknowledge I would agree one point, the briefing didn't meander somewhat, and I think the issue is narrow. It is mootness, is what the court should resolve. All of the other issues are really ancillary.
But we do have to analyze the exceptions, right, the three potential exceptions to the mootness doctrine?
Absolutely. And district court did that, and I would submit that the district court thoroughly went through each of those exceptions. And again, I incorporate those arguments of the district court. And I ask that this court...
One of those exceptions depends in part on whether the issue is of statewide importance. Would you agree with that?
There is a... You know, and Dean talks about this too, and it says the court has the discretion. It says that the court has the discretion when it presents an important question of statewide significance that should be decided immediately. But then Dean goes into the situations where it's really criminal type cases. And again, I'd refer the court to the Dean that there's a very limited situation where it must be done immediately. And I would suggest ordinances are different. So we have the Burnsville ordinance. There's nothing in the record that communities across the state are utilizing the Burnsville ordinance. So there's no reason that a decision on this is going to have statewide impact because we're only dealing with the city of Burnsville's ordinance in this litigation. So I would submit the district court touched on this. Dean, concerning the reasoning of Dean v. City of Winona, none of these exceptions apply, and for those reasons, we ask that the court affirm the district court, and thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you. First of all, cited by the other side was a rule that absolutely this court would never abide by, nor would the Supreme Court. And that is if you don't find something in your own files until 5 years later, you can bring it up then. Over and over, the appellate courts say, if you don't raise it in a timely manner, you're out of luck. And in this particular issue, he's admitting that they did not raise it anywhere before they got to the Supreme Court because, and they're saying we're supposed to know things. They're saying we don't even have to know our own files. When we're in the middle of litigation, we don't even have to know our own rules. But the other side does. That's not the law. The law is if you don't raise it, you gave it up. And this is not jurisdictional. I send your thoughts to State v. Rudd. He, in his entire argument, cited one case and one case only. And State v. Rudd is companioned by numerous other cases, including Jensen. And even in Dean, it uses this language. Mootness is not a mechanical issue. That is automatically invoked whenever the underlying dispute between the parties is settled or otherwise resolved. It is instead a flexible, discretionary doctrine. And that's word for word out of several different cases, including Rudd, which I cite in my brief. Now, what's important about that, this case ended, this argument ended right there. All the other things we're talking about are interesting, entertaining, but they're irrelevant. This ended when he did not raise it a year after it happened in the trial. It did not raise it almost 2 years after it happened in this court, and did not allow it to go forward in the Supreme Court. However you want to phrase it, he was the one, the Supreme Court didn't say, we're not going to entertain that. He said, I don't want you to rule on it. And they viewed that as a withdrawal. That's how they viewed it. How he views it isn't important. It's how the court viewed it. So that ended this whole debate. As we wander into whether the elements are there, as we lay out very carefully in our brief, they are there. Even if he timely made this argument, he would still lose. And the reason he would still lose is none of the mootness factors, I mean, I can say none or all, the mootness factors fall in our favor. You got the same issue. It's going statewide. It's going to be applied again. And going to your correct analysis that I was citing some of the federal cases, the wisdom of the federal cases is not lost on the state. The fact that those federal cases are dealing with the same issue is guidance to us. It's not the same thing as the Minnesota Supreme Court case, I agree, but a U.S. Supreme Court case tends to carry a fair amount of weight. I'd also point out that on every one of these factors, I mean, I don't care which factor you go to, they did not show it. They did not establish any of these things. And their argument, their unilateral action, which was clearly discretionary because the answer given today was not the answer in the briefing. The answer in the briefing to the court below was, we waited until we were sure he would not file. Now, that's quoted in the briefs. That's a very different argument than you heard today. We waited, that shows it's completely discretionary. If you don't have to pull it at a year and you wait 4 years because you want to make sure he wasn't going to file, and never call him up, never call me up. Paul and I talk frequently. Never say, hey, Steve, we got an issue here. Is he going to file? That never happened. Instead, they invent issues to explain this five-year gap. During that time, lots of time, energy, and money is being spent. That enforces the waiver. You have a situation here where the first time they ever argued this was in the remand. They never argued it before that. They threw it in their Supreme Court brief and scurried it right out of there as soon as they could. So I want to emphasize on this point, we don't go any further. Opposing counsel mentioned that this was a simple case. It is a simple case. They blew it. They didn't have, and even if they had, I point out that that still wouldn't have created mootness, because the same issue persists to you today, not to you because it's not in front of you, but to the trial court today, that persisted at the very beginning. His rephrasing, what we wanted was always the ability to get a plat that was constitutionally appropriate. There's nothing in this ordinance that's constitutionally appropriate. Across the board, and nobody has ever said there's anything constitutional about this ordinance. But in his own email, he is telling his clients, which are the cities all over the state, that they won and the Constitution issues were raised. That's what he's telling them. And in front of the district court, he said, people are in his oral argument, he said, cities are following this all over the state. That is in the record. Let me see here. There were so many things he said that I wanted to get back to. Oops, I see him at zero. I would just like to say in closing that virtually all of his arguments I disagree with, even though I didn't have the time to say why. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today and your briefs. We will get a decision out within the statutory time frame, and with that, this case is submitted.